It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, recording in progress. How do you like this setup? It's pretty bad, right? Yeah. This is the work of a couple days for me, and this is the best I could come up with. So that tells you the level we're working on. I don't think this is going to be the regular bit, but the next two episodes were, because we're recording them back to back. And actually, since we do it on Zoom, we won't even have the like 10 minute thing in between. Like, we'll have seconds between the episodes. So the energy level on the second one will probably be really low.
Probably.
But for now, super psyched to be here. I want to talk to you, William. Hi.
Good.
By the way. Good. Thank you for coming on our show. I'm James Lipton. Welcome to Inside the Podcaster Studio. I'd like to speak to Evil William for a moment. I want to talk for a second about movie trailers.
Movie trailers.
I have been thinking lately about movie trailers and the purpose of movie trailers and the actual effect of movie trailers and how movie trailers impact my life.
Your life.
Yeah, I'm never considering other people's lives. That's my life.
Okay.
Side note, got a haircut this morning.
Congratulations.
Thank you. She's trying to bilk me out of more money. She left it pretty long, and I was like, that's just so I have to come back sooner. She's like, I can cut it shorter, so I made her do it. I like trailers, movie trailers in general. I enjoy them. When there's a YouTube ad and it's a movie trailer, I'll usually watch it, unless it's one I've already seen. My favorite is when I search for a movie trailer on YouTube and the ad before it is a movie trailer. And sometimes the ad before it is the movie trailer whose video I'm trying to watch, which is really fun.
Interesting.
Trish loves movies. Trish has an app. There's an app that will just show you upcoming movie trailers. And it's very good. And she shows me a lot of them too. However, they might be ruining movies. There is, and this has been discussed a little bit more and more, there's too much information in movie trailers. And you see the movie trailer and you're like, I know the whole plot, including the end, based on this. And I know they cheat sometimes and things like that. Yeah. By the way, the cats are coming by a bunch and there's a low cord and it's all going to suck, people. It's fine. Don't worry. And that's not necessarily a problem, because this is a thing. Apparently, despite people not liking spoilers, including me, a lot of times you enjoy things more if it's already spoiled for you, apparently. I don't know how that works exactly, but they've done studies and science and whatever, and that's a thing. So that's good. But there is a not insignificant percentage of movies and TV out in the world nowadays for which the only interest is the reveal, the twist, the mystery. And then that's it. So here's my really prime example right now. M. Night Shyamalan's new upcoming movie, Old. You familiar?
I mean, I've heard of
it. You've seen trailers?
No.
Okay, there's trailers for it. Spoilers for the trailer for Old. Is a movie where some people go on vacation to a resort, and these families, they go to a beach at the resort, and it turns out that time is moving much faster and they get older and they can't leave the beach, and like everybody gets super old super fast. I want to know what the twist is. I will be able to do that a day after, if not before then, the movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know that. And so there's absolutely no reason for me to see this movie. But I do actually want to know the whole point of the, like, what? Why are people going to see this movie? Who's like, I really want to know what's going to happen, but I can't be bothered to. I mean, I understand, like, you know, I want to see the characters, and I get it, but it's also M. Night Shyamalan. Like, I cannot fathom that there is anything to this movie other than the twist and maybe some weird special effects occasionally, but not even much of that. And I'm like, that's all you left us, and you left us enough information up front that I need like one sentence. Like, I know everything else that happens. We saw a pregnant lady who wasn't pregnant when she first came on the beach. There's little kids that get older. Somebody, their bones decompose. Like, we get it. I just, like, what is it? Why would you watch it at this point? Like, I don't. And there's a lot of movies like that where I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. Not enough to sit through 90 minutes, but enough to go to Wikipedia a week after it's out and see what the twist was. And I don't. Is this the fault of trailers? Would I be more likely to go see these things if instead, like, later people were like, you should see, oh, it's really good. What's it about? I won't tell you, because it's all about a mystery. Because, I mean, I have seen movies where the whole point is what is the twist, and enjoyed them. And in almost every case, it's because I knew nothing about the movie going in.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't a shitty mystery. And that's no shot to M. Night Shyamalan, although he is terrible at that. But the majority of movies that are like, oh, what's the mystery? What's the twist? Are shitty. Because we don't play with it at all. We're just like, oh, what's the thing? What's the thing? Here's the thing. Like, there are movies that are really cool that they're like, oh, is it this? Is it this? Oh, we're making you think this. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Oh, is this a whole different thing? Like, things to keep you busy. I feel like, and, you know, listeners, go out. Somebody watch this movie and tell me. I don't know. I feel like Old is just going to be about people getting old and freaking out about that. And then we find out what happens at the end. Like, maybe there's more nuance to it. I find it unlikely. And I would be pissed if I went, if I thought there was, and I went and I was like, oh, so it's the trailer for 84 minutes. And then we find out what it is. And worse, and this is straight to M. Night Shyamalan, we might not even fucking find out. Movies totally pull this shit where it's like, it's not about what caused the aging. It's about, in which case I'm like, well, that's only good if your aging stuff was cool. And I've seen the trailer. This is not going to go. And honestly, I don't think he'll do that. He has found his niche, which is B-level horror. And he's excelling at that. And so I don't think he'll fuck with that formula here. But I don't mean to push on Old. Old is such a good exemplar of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Are trailers ruining this? And I don't watch, there's sometimes where people are like, you want to see the trailer for things? Like, I didn't watch the trailer for the What If series that's coming out on Disney Plus, the What If Marvel series. You know why? I'm just going to watch it. So I don't really need to see a trailer. Of course, I say that, but I also ate up the Endgame trailers every time one came out. I wanted to see that. And I always knew I was going to watch that too. So I don't know what it means, but I feel like, and more I'm finding movies that I'm like, this is much better if you don't know anything about it going into it. So I'm worried that trailers are ruining our lives.
I mean, it seems like a lot of what you just said relies on the kind of movie we're talking about. So it's not really about trailers at all. Or your own personal preferences about what you know about a thing or not. So also not really about trailers in general. So I'm not sure if trailers are the issue here, or it's just certain movies. I mean, like M. Night Shyamalan movies. Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't even make trailers because there's nothing to them except the end. And the trailer just is either going to give everything away, or it's not going to tell you anything or encourage you to see the movie.
See, and I disagree, because if you go back, I want to say around the mid 90s and earlier, it's not an issue. Trailers are not nearly as explicit and as plot involved going back then. And this problem didn't exist back then. Trailers didn't do the shit where they put all the best jokes in the trailer, where they give you one of the twists up front and stuff like that.
I don't know. We've watched some old trailers before and they pretty much gave you the whole movie, because back then, say the 70s, nobody was complaining about spoilers. Like, nobody cared if they knew the whole story. They went to the movie to see the movie, to see the actors, to see how the story played out. Like, you know, that research you said you've seen that says you can enjoy the movie better and have spoilers. I think what that speaks
to. No. I said it existed, not that I've seen it or that I can prove it. I read on the internet.
I'm also aware of this research, but I think the way that works is it's kind of like, you know how many times I come on the podcast and I say, I'm going to have to see this movie again because I'm not sure. And then the next time, maybe I can enjoy it.
Yes.
That's kind of part of what it's like. It's like the first time you see a thing, and if you're like me and you don't want to see spoilers or whatever, it creates a certain amount of tension in seeing the film the first time.
Yeah.
That is relieved when you see it the second time. So.
And I have definitely had movies where the first time I had a very different reaction than the second time, in both directions. I've had movies that I hated the first time and loved the second time. And I've had movies that I loved the first time and hated the second time. And not a whole, you know, the suck fairy got to it. Like, I've seen them in quick succession and felt that way.
Well, I think my experience with trailers being a problem.
Yeah, my knee is the size of my head.
Completely relates to the expectations they create, right? A lot of times trailers will create very specific expectations for the film, and then the film isn't what people expected based on the trailers. And the film might actually be perfectly fine, but because it didn't meet people's expectations, it gets panned, it gets trashed. You know, so, I mean, to me, that's always been the problem with trailers, is if they create, to me, that's also a problem with the whole thing about, well, I don't want to have any spoilers. I don't want to go in with any information. Well, you almost always go in with some kind of expectations, and that can impact how you judge the film, which is fair enough, but it also might be from a critic's standpoint, it might be an unfair evaluation if it's all about, well, this didn't meet my expectations. So sometimes sometimes
almost always, if I know I'm going to see a movie, I will very purposely read no reviews of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way too. But I often will
afterwards read them because I want to see how they compare.
Yeah, but I'll also avoid trailers sometimes in that case.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. When I don't want to see trailers, I really don't want to see trailers. And the only connection I've ever had is I'm already going to see it. There's no point. But I don't know how that works, because there are some movies where that is the case, and I very much want to see the trailers. So I don't know what that's about.
Well, like with Endgame, I mean, you knew it was just going to be full of fantastic visual things that you want to see.
That's true. With Endgame, it's not like there would be. I mean, everybody talks about spoilers, but I'm like, no, it's just going to be some big shit. I mean, yeah, I'll be excited at the time, but
yeah.
I mean, I still watch the Avengers Assemble clip all the time on YouTube. I love it. I get chills every time.
So, yeah, I don't know.
You made me think, several years ago now, there was a movie. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was just called The Judge. And it was a movie starring Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall. And Robert Downey Jr. was a hotshot lawyer, because it's Robert Downey Jr., who has to go home to his small town where his father is a judge, because I think his father was sick or something like that. And the trailers, that movie got panned very badly, and it was a very good film. It got panned because the trailers absolutely made it look like a John Grisham-esque courtroom drama thing. And what it was a, you know, men of a certain age coming home and dealing with the unresolved issues of your father, kind of, you know, the father-son relationship finally coming to a head. It's a common genre. This wasn't treading new ground, but it was a very good movie. And there were scenes in a courtroom. There were very few of them. And so people felt seriously baited and switched. And I could see that. And I saw the trailers for it. Mostly at that point, we were just heavily in love with Robert Downey Jr. at the time. So we were going to go see it for that. And it's a really good movie, and I recommend it now. It's not a courtroom drama. It's a family drama, essentially, that spends very little time in the courtroom. So you're right. That can throw off things.
Well, I've always liked trailers. I always try to get to a theater so I can see the trailers, but purely because they're advertisements for movies and I might want to see them. I mean, where else am I going to see advertisements for movies? I mean, I realize I don't really watch network television, right? So it's like, and for a long time, I wasn't online and subscribing to some kind of YouTube channel for what are you doing?
There's a phone over there. I don't know what time it is. So I have no idea when this episode is going to be done.
You don't have any time on your computer?
Well, yeah, but I'm doing full screen.
Okay. Anyway, so
you know what time it is?
No. So I didn't have a YouTube channel that was feeding me trailers. So the only place I was going to see advertisements for new movies and know what new movies were coming out was to go to the theater and see them.
Yeah. And I've never wanted to avoid them when I go to the theater.
Right.
This is going to be a problem if we don't know how long we've been recording.
You just don't know where your phone is?
Yeah, I might have left it in another room. I don't know. All right. You keep talking about trailers. I'll be back.
Keep talking about trailers.
Yeah. And how they've changed your life.
You know what they should have more of is like little pieces of animation while you're waiting for the movie to start, like they used to have. That'd be cool. Well, maybe it wouldn't be cool. I don't know. I don't know if modern animation is really up to snuff for that. But that's kind of an interesting phenomena, don't you think? The whole Warner Brothers cartoons that we grew up watching as kids were made for adults to watch in movie theaters.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, don't.
I feel like we just got a glimpse into you doing a solo podcast and it was terrifying.
Well, I don't think that's interesting.
No, the problem is halfway through you stopped thinking it was interesting and then you changed your mind again. If you had a solo podcast, you were like, wouldn't this be cool? Well, maybe not. But no, I agree with you. I think they should have more of those. And I still like that when Pixar does that.
Yeah, Pixar's are pretty good.
And if you go to Epcot Center, there's a place you go and you learn all about the history of Disney animation. And then you go sit down and you watch several shorts, some that are just standard Disney, some that are Pixar. And it's really great. I think more should do that, because the problem is it's all gotten commodified now. It's like, no, we're going to bring you commercials instead. But yeah, that's one of the things I look forward to. I haven't seen a Pixar movie in a theater in years, but I look forward to the little short before.
I mean, I wouldn't like Warner Brothers to make, let's make new Warner Brothers cartoons with Bugs Bunny.
We did it. It's called Space Jam, A New Legacy.
I just don't think that's ever going to, we've got classic cartoons. Let's keep those. Now let's do something different. And I don't mean something like Animaniacs or whatever. I mean, let's do something completely different. Maybe let's just have independent artists do animation things, maybe compete, and whoever wins gets to have their animation thing, like, you know, in front of movies or whatever.
Well, in there's a whole category of animated shorts that like the Pixar animators got to do as passion projects. Pearl was one of them. Those are great.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
I love those.
But like lots of in there. Lots of places could do that. So it's not all just Pixar. You know, lots of studios could do it, or also there could be ways for independent artists. Because do they still have an animation film festival around here once in a while? I mean, I haven't gone for ages. You went.
I have no idea. Well, Bijou used to show all the Oscar short films, and they one night they would show the non-animated and one night they would show the animated. And it was just all the Oscar nominees. I would imagine Film Scene didn't do it last year, but they probably would do it again.
I mean, the people who are doing independent.
Seriously, Addy, I'm gonna murder you.
Independent animation are doing such amazing things, and nobody really sees it. You know, how are they ever going to see it? Unless it, even if it wins an award or something, a lot of times people don't see it. So,
hello everyone, welcome to the Magical Talking App Podcast, the only podcast in the world that proves, sometimes on its own, white male privilege just isn't enough. Still end up like this. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 540.
540.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hear me periodically yelling at Addy because he's doing this thing lately where he's just running back and forth. And I say lately, since we've been sitting in these chairs, and he keeps just barely skirting under the line to the camera. And one of these times he's going to knock it over and I'm going to murder him. So. Get ready for that.
Yes. I mean, he's
first the only podcast in the world gonna kill a cat live on camera.
I mean, he's clearly doing it because he's seeing that thing. Oh, this will be fun to go under and to go over. He's doing it on purpose, obviously.
It's like, he's a weirdo.
If that wasn't hanging there, he would just go do something else.
I think so. Although you being here could also trigger it.
Oh,
and he's like, oh, what's going on here? Look, I mean, he's clearly just looking for his stimulus. But yeah, I do think that's part of it. For those of you just joining the podcast for the first time, weird, but welcome. We have a hat. It's right over here. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people have been sending in emails, little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, so far, all on its own, magically, been transmogrifying those emails into little note cards with the information written on the manifest physically within the hat itself. And we, these guys, draw those note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. That will not continue soon. And it will switch up to people will send emails to the hat, and the hat will forward them on to us as it sees fit, and we will read them on the air and talk about them until we're bored and do that for about an hour, and that'll be the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is going to be most of it after we're finished with the little note cards, which we're getting close. We need more emails after that. People, get on it. They can still be your short ones if you want, or they can be more involved, or they can be fake, whatever. We won't edit. The hat may, but we won't edit at all. So no hate speech, please, or threatening the president. Yeah, and we're going to do two back to back now because I will be in Virginia next week, and the timing just, like, it would be complicated. Like, we could do it over Zoom, but the scheduling would be weird stuff. So we're just going to do it now because we can. Here we are.
Here we go.
Peter's done us. So how's your week been?
Been all right. Just school. That's
really school. Lots of about. School.
Yeah, nothing really.
We finished out Loki Watch last week, right?
I think.
Yeah, we already talked about that. That's done. I'd like to talk about Fear Street.
Okay.
You know what Fear Street is?
I mean, I've heard of it.
Yeah. Fear Street. Terribly named. Street is not involved in the thing at all, and Fear is involved, but it's somebody's last name and it's spelled differently than the title. Fear Street, apparently, series of R.L. Stine books, the Goosebumps guy. Mm-hmm. I think they're targeted slightly older. They might be considered young adult. I don't really know at this point. but they are about a town, well, two towns, and one town is everything's wonderful all the time, going back generations. And one town, shit's fucked up because they keep having serial killers going back centuries. People just spontaneously will murder tons and tons of people, and it just sucks to be them. And the Netflix thing is a series of three movies that are, that comprises like a mini series basically. Okay. And it is interesting in that the first one is set in 1994. The second one flashes back to 1978. And then the third one flashes all the way back to 1666 when everything started. I will say the 1994 story is a framing story. So they're not wholly separate movies. Like the 1978 one is somebody telling the story of being at the 1978 thing to the 1994 people. As I said, I believe they are young adult books by the guy who did Goosebumps. They are R-rated, and they have quite a lot of violence and gore in them, which was a little surprising. But Trish and I watched them three nights in a row. Boom, boom, boom. That's all. That's all I want to say.
Okay.
How did you think they were, Tony?
Wait, do that again.
I'm still doing it. They can't see my lips from this angle.
Say it again.
How did you think they were, Tony? Oh, that kind of worked. I like that. That was pretty good. Glad you asked, William. They're fine.
Why do you spend so much time talking about these things that are either terrible or just fine? I mean, what? Like, you don't even want to talk about it, but you're talking about it. It's so weird.
I've had a talk with Trish about this lately. So, when I was still working at ACT,
yeah,
the work was fairly unsatisfying for me because I was a small cog in a big system.
Sure.
What I was doing I didn't really see how it mattered and all this stuff. And I was very unfulfilling. However, everybody loved me and I got along well with people, and people would talk about how I brightened their day. And, you know, I did the thing with the emails and everything. And I really felt valued in that sense.
That's nice.
People liked me. And they tried to appreciate the work, but they could only do so far because it's like, I don't know what it's about. So now working at home, the work is very rewarding. And sure, my wife is very good at appreciating that around.
Yeah, sure.
I kind of feel like nobody gives a shit about me as a person now, and with good reason, in that I pick up Trish from work. And she comes home and she tells me stories from work and all this stuff or whatever. And I have bupkis to tell her, except shit I saw on YouTube or funny things the cats did. And so I am good about what I do for a living, as it were, maintaining the house and all that. And I'm good. I desperately am trying to make myself relevant as a person. But not in a way that takes a lot of effort, okay, like volunteering or shit like that.
Sure.
So like, I really want to talk about, like, you would be amazed at how much I'm keeping myself from talking more about McElroy Brothers. Speaking of, later I have to send you a thing. There's a longer version of Curse of Real Sword. That version was edited for the animatic. It's thing. Longer, and it's not, like, they did a good job how they edited it, but the longer version is interesting.
Okay.
I keep forgetting to send that to you. And so, shit I saw on TV, I gotta get it out there regardless. Well, and these were before I talk about, like, this movie sucked, but it did something interesting. And there, Fear Street was not mediocre.
Oh, okay.
Fear Street was a combination of shit I really didn't like and shit that I did like.
Oh.
And so it sort of balanced out to, It's fine.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
It. Here's the two. I have one major pro thing and one major con thing about
it. Let's hear it.
The pro thing about it is, it is a cohesive story, beginning, middle, end, good resolution, and all that, over three movies. And so you watch a lot of these TV shows and things where it's this big mystery and it goes on and on and on. Like, this is fairly concise, but it's long enough that there's like an arc to it and there's a story.
Okay.
And that's good. And it's good to enjoy that. And it's an interesting story. It's not super original, but it was interesting enough that like Trish and I were theorizing about it after each movie and stuff. And we weren't like, after one movie, we had these theories, and after the next one, we had different theories. And then it turned out the end result was even different and stuff like that. I wouldn't say it was groundbreaking, but like, yeah, you wonder what's going on and stuff like that. And then the con I will say is, after you have watched it, it does not behoove itself to thinking about too much afterwards, because there's so many plot holes afterwards. Because obviously, it's a supernatural thing. It's not going to turn out it's, you know, generations of one family just decided they're going to murder people, or like there are supernatural elements. And the whole thing is, it's a curse from a witch who was hanged wrongly, maybe. And so she cursed the town, you know, that standard chestnut.
I've never heard of that
right,
story
before. Right. But twist. But so there are supernatural elements, but like, there are layers to what's going on. And afterwards, the bits that they don't explicitly show, you're like, but wait, how would that have? And apparently, this has been successful enough, they're potentially going to make more of them. Because what we have here is, we have the end of the story, presumably set when the books were written. I don't know. And the third movie is the beginning of the story. And the second movie is a point in the middle. But there's a whole bunch of those middle points. And so they may do movies about others of those middle points. But yeah, some of the stuff doesn't hold together real well. It does some kind of good progressive things that are points in their favor, but they're also things that I'm tired of witnessing. So that was complicated. I would say they're good performances all around. Nobody I knew except Gillian Jacobs from Community is in it, which was interesting. That kind of came out of nowhere. And she does a great job, and it's not a comedic role at all, so that was fun. But everybody else weren't people that I knew, but they do good. So yeah, I mean, it's worth checking out. And it's weird. I was telling the neighbors the other night, so they have a 12-year-old and an 11-year-old, and well, soon to be 13-year-old and 11-year-old. And I'm like, they're young, based off of young adult books, they are very much R-rated movie. There's F-bombs, there's some very brief nudity, there's one actual sex scene, there's several times where people are clearly gonna have sex and then like monsters come in and so they don't, but I was like, weirdly I feel like this is something you all as a family could enjoy. And it's hard to explain why. Like, it has, if I'm surprised it's not PG-13. It feels like it's directed toward a PG-13 crowd, but it's very much R-rated. I don't know. It's interesting.
Did you read his books when you were younger?
I did not. I was just the wrong age.
Okay.
Well, just the wrong age / scared of shit. Because the entire horror genre, I did not go near until maybe college.
Oh, I see.
Because I was scared of shit. I was scared of the dark, I was scared of ghosts, I was scared of monsters, all that stuff. And so, but, and I've talked about this before, but at a fairly early age, I did get obsessed. Like, people would tell me the plots of horror movies, like older kids or cooler kids or kids with more neglectful parents, and I was fascinated by those stories. And so I eventually found out that the horror genre often has really cool stories. And then as I got even older, the horror genre is intentionally often transgressive in a way that can be very progressive and cover issues that other genres won't. And I find that fascinating. So yeah, I don't know. Check it out, maybe. It's fine. But I kind of think you and your wife might enjoy it.
Maybe we'll give it a try.
I don't know. Unfortunately, sometimes you are thinking too fast. So like all the stuff that since we've watched it might occur to you in the moment and you'll be like, this is dumb. That's pretty much it. Let's do some things.
Okay, let's do some things. Give us some emails, Hat. I mean, note cards. You'll give us emails later. But for now, it's note cards.
This is from Dave of Id.
I'm not going to say that that's good or bad because it hurts Azure Talon's feelings.
It's good that it's not Azure Talon. So
that's not what I meant.
No, that's what I meant. I don't want you biting my style here. I'm the guy who hates Azure Talon and hurts his feelings.
Right, but he thought I was the one
who hates him. And I'm saying back off.
I didn't do it.
Mm.
It was a misunderstanding.
Mm. 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 Get off my lawn. Which level of Dante's hell from his Inferno book would work best to categorize where Trump and his supporters should be sent to? Well, this is a bummer of a question. Yeah, I actually kind of wish Azure Talon had done something. Now, okay. There's a lot to unpack about the fact that this question was, I'm not going to answer the question. I'll just straight up say I'm not answering the question. But there's a lot to talk about here. There is a time period where I would have worked to answer this question. In the heat of that terrible presidency, when I was particularly rage filled at things, I might have. I don't like thinking about him now. And also, I very much at this point, as much as it annoys me and as much as terrible things happen and all that, I really do feel that the bulk of his supporters are just desperate and ignorant and narrow side. I don't think they're evil jerks. I think they're stupid jerks. Like I don't think there's malice. I think he has a lot of supporters who want people to be fine. They just don't get that their definition of fine is really fucked up, and that their definition of reality is really fucked up. But I also want to make a very big point here. I am surprised to see this from Dave of Id. And the only thing I can think is Dave of Id wrote this when something happened that really made him feel angry. This does not strike me as a Dave of Id kind of question. because, I mean, you know, love you, Dave. We're talking on email the other day. It's not a good question. It's not an interesting question. It's not a good question. It's basically a question that could just be a statement saying, Jesus, I fucking hate Trump and his people. Don't you? yes. Yes. Sure. I believe one of the earlier circles involves betrayal. So that could be a thing, but I don't know.
Well, I think the deepest, I was reading Dante's Inferno there for a while. And I wanted to read not just the Inferno. I wanted to read the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't even finish Inferno, but as I understand it, the part of hell that's supposed to be like the worst, or like the, you know, where the worst of the worst goes. Yeah. I think it doesn't, it's like betrayal or like mutineers and,
yeah,
things of that nature.
I read the Wikipedia summary of the Divine Comedy. And let me tell you right now, that's fucking long enough. Like, I read it over multiple days. It is a big ass thing, but it was a while ago.
Well, the thing about reading it, and I was reading it in an annotated thing, which you almost have to do because there's a lot of things that Dante talks about that's, it's not going to make any sense to you if you don't have some scholar saying, oh, that's, he's talking about this person.
There's a lot of current events in the Divine Comedy.
That's right. I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense to you at all. And the thing is, my interest in it is actually not that stuff. Like, I'm not particularly interested in what social commentary he was making. I'm interested in, what was the world building, I guess, going on here? Why were there this many levels? Why is this level this and that? Why did he prioritize the sins this way? And on the paradise side, why did he, and not only that, but when you put all that together in why he did this, that, or the other thing, how did that influence what people wrote later? And recently, I've been kind of looking into the Book of Enoch.
Okay.
Because, Book of Enoch, I'm aware of that it exists and so on and so forth. Never read it. Don't know a lot about it. I know certain thinkers in the past that have seemed to make a big deal out of it. Like,
for listeners, Book of Enoch, one of the more famous books of the Apocrypha, the Gospels that didn't make it into the Bible.
Well, not a Gospel. It's Jewish, actually. It's a Jewish.
I thought the Book of Enoch was one of the...
No.
Oh, okay.
But it's apocryphal Jewish literature.
It is... Hell, I make reference to it in Odd Wings. Whenever you want to talk about vaguely biblical mythological shit that the Bible itself can't just cover, you just reference Enoch and then you're all set.
Although maybe it's not fair to call it apocryphal. I guess I don't know, there's probably certain Jewish sects that have a certain orientation toward it and different, I don't know. I shouldn't speak for the Jewish faith and how it interacts with that particular piece of literature, but it's mostly famous for its, what it says about angels and things of that sort.
Which is why it gets used in a lot of biblical mythology.
Right. So, but I've never read it. I just am familiar with it and its reputation. But recently I did a little research on it and thought maybe I would like to read this because it started to occur to me how much stuff in it might have informed the Dante or informed what informed Dante. You know what I'm saying? And also how much of it seems to inform or at least seem to be very similar to what you find in the Book of Revelation. It's like, I'm starting to wonder just how influential the Book of Enoch really is in terms of medieval culture and not just medieval culture, but first century Christian culture. So I've been kind of interested in that lately, but I don't, that's mostly why I was interested in reading the Dante's Inferno, but I didn't really finish it. So
I was curious if Dante's Inferno, as a cultural reference, because we always talk about it, and I'm like, what was it? And B, as a looking at the setting, essentially, I'm like, what are the levels? And I could totally see myself, well, if I ever did this again, like in college, I would have loved to take a full semester class that just analyzed it.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But outside of that, I don't give a shit. There have been some video games that have been loosely based on it, but they've all been really loosely based in the sense that, hey, we made hell and it has levels. There's probably a boss fight at the end of each one.
Well, it's interesting because the Bible is, I mean, as far as I know, and I've read it a few times, doesn't really sit there and talk about hell and levels and things like that.
No, no, no.
So when you're telling a story and you decide, hey, I'm going to have a story that has hell in it, and I'm going to do some world building about hell, but you don't want to do it all from scratch. There's basically one source.
Yep.
There's one source you can go to that's done all that work for you, and it's Dante.
And almost all the fallen angel stuff, the whole concept of Lucifer and all that, that's all Enoch.
Yeah.
Both Lucifer and Satan are not names that appear in the Bible at all.
Now you might get, maybe Milton has some stuff.
That fucker.
You might that might be some world building you can get for Heaven and Hell and
Paradise Lost, right?
Yeah.
And Regained and
Purgatory and all that stuff, yeah, maybe. Yeah. But I feel like even that owes a lot to Dante. And so it's like, that's a big deal. That's a big cultural impact that that has had. And so when you're a storyteller or, you know, especially if you're going to do fictional storytelling, and especially if you're going to drift into horror or dark romance or gothic or whatever else, it starts to become kind of an important influence, you know, in the genre.
I mean, it's absolutely something I should have done more research into before writing my book, without a doubt.
I might get the Book of Enoch and read it, because I think it has probably influenced all biblical literature, including Christian biblical literature, more than I realized.
If you get it off of Audible, it's actually narrated by Lucifer. So you should check that out. All right, another thing. What? This is from Beth. It's about Johnson County. No, it's not. But holy crap. This is how, like, the other day, Trisha's like, you think nothing's going on? So yesterday.
I think nothing's going on.
How I was talking about, like, nothing's happening in my life, you know, that thing. She's like, yeah, you're full of shit. You just aren't telling me. Because yesterday, my wife texts me a thing that she saw somewhere that said, did you know Johnson County used to be named after blah, 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 but recently they named it after blah, blah, blah. And I was, for a second, I was like, is she being funny? And then I was like, do you not? Yes, I knew this. Did I not talk? This dominated my life for a couple of months. Like, this was a whole saga.
Yeah.
Do you not? And it turned out, no, it hadn't. And so I had to tell her the whole thing. Like, Beth writes in, you and I talk about it. Beth writes in again, you and I talk about it some more. It happens. The nation makes us look like assholes. I talk about it with my friends. They get really pissed off at me. And then we finally have to resolve it all, like the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, no, this was my life for quite a while. She's like, well, see, you didn't, this is the stuff. You didn't tell me any of this one. So
that's interesting.
I was like, how did I not? You produce this podcast. How do you not know this stuff?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Beth says, gender pronouns. That's it. No. Gender pronouns. Please discuss your views on how and when to use them. Is there a good reason why someone would mix their choice, aka she/him? All right. Standard disclaimer. We are two white male identified individuals who use he, him pronouns. We have no business talking about this.
Probably
not. So,
probably not.
I'm really interested about the mixed one. I don't think so, because the difference in isolated pronouns within a particular type are just, you know, possessive, not possessive, subject, object, things like that. So I don't know why your place in sentence structure would change your gendering. So my belief would be no on that one. This has been interesting. I due to a couple friends, I now follow/see a shit ton of transgender individuals on my Twitter feed all the time. And so a lot of these discussions come up, and the topic also of, like, when you're initially in a group or whatever and asking what pronouns you use. And some people only do that with people who are obviously trans or non-binary and things like that. And, like, that becomes weird because you didn't ask everybody that. But on the other hand, with a lot of them, you can assume and you're correct. And my opinion is gendered pronouns suck, and it would be great if we didn't have them. However, I'm not proposing, you know, we invent Esperanto 2.0. And I mean, it's in our language. So I don't think we can just swap it out starting today kind of thing. Yeah, I guess if you're ever uncertain, ask. What frequently it's good not to be like, what are your pronouns, but more like, what do you want to be called? If you're ever in a group and you're uncertain about certain individuals, ask everyone. Mm. And I think it's great to put it on bios and things. I on mine, I specifically have listed any pronouns because I thought about it and I'm like, I don't care. I genuinely don't care what pronouns you use on me. I'm not super happy about it, but I only know a few people who do want it, and I'm not sure I'm cool with that. So I'm like, that's a whole other issue that's yours and not something you should be putting on me. But I'm fine with he, she, they, us, you. Sometimes people call me William. I'm okay with that. Did you know William's name is actually a pronoun?
And if you're curious how it changes for, it's always just William.
Yes.
The possessive is William.
It's all William. William's all the way down. It's like Smurf.
Yeah, it's like Smurf. It's
very much like Smurf. You just use William.
You just use William. In fact, not
you
only can, is William.
If you William Williams William.
Yeah.
He's going to be, William's going to be very William.
Yeah. So it not only is it a pronoun, but it's a lot of other things too. Very much like Smurf.
Yeah.
Very much. Yep. Correct.
And we're just lucky we're not in a language that genders all of its nouns, like French and Spanish and stuff. Like that's, ugh.
I mean, when it comes to pronouns, I don't know. I don't, the first time anyone ever presented to me the idea that some people want to be called different pronouns because of gender issues, I remember thinking, well, that makes sense. I mean, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, if someone wants me to call them different pronouns, okay, whatever. Now, I get a little concerned that I'll forget or that I'll mess it up. And
that's a constant thing with any proper terms and things like that. Yeah. And people need patience on that.
I mean, I hope someone would be patient because especially me, because I'm so bad about remembering anything. So if I'm forgetting that, it's not that.
Sometimes he calls me William.
Yeah, I'm not forgetting that particular thing. I forget everything. So I hope people would be patient with me, but I have no problem with it. It's fine. When people make fun of the whole pronoun thing, I don't understand that because, like, why do you care what pronouns a person wants? I don't understand what would even motivate someone to think that it's silly or it's just they're just words and it means something to this person. So, okay. So then it means something.
Now, and this is interesting because I agree with you, but I think there's an interesting example here. You and I, talking about the Johnson County thing the second time, were quite flippant and in my case outright obnoxious about how like this doesn't fucking matter and it doesn't actually change anything, and the truth is it matters to a whole bunch of people.
That's true.
And it's full disclosure, I still don't give a shit who Johnson County is named after, but it very clearly matters on an important symbolic level for a bunch of people, and therefore I am entirely in favor of it.
Sure.
But
I go along with that.
I think the pronoun thing is often somebody who's a little less thoughtful than us saying that same sort of thing. Like, it doesn't fucking matter. This is silly. I'm going to mock it.
Well,
then there's also the people who just don't believe transgenderism is a thing. Yeah, and they're like, now you're just making shit up.
There's, it doesn't matter, so therefore we shouldn't do it. And it doesn't matter, so why shouldn't we be able to do it?
Yes.
I mean,
no, but what I'm saying is I can relate to the first one because that's kind of how I was with the Johnson County thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is fucking dumb. And it's like, well, it's not dumb to other people and it doesn't hurt anything. So now I'm like, you're right.
I don't think either one of us ever opposed it. I think we both thought that it wasn't as impressive as if like the whole name had to change. And I still feel that way, actually. It's like, this isn't, I mean, I think it's important and I appreciate the people for whom it's important to, don't get me wrong, but it's like, it, as I keep saying, it's still technically named after the first person. Yeah, yeah.
I at least opposed it enough to openly mock it.
Oh, okay.
in the episode, right. I laughed a lot, and I don't think that the Johnson County naming thing is probably as important to people as a lot of people's pronouns are. But it's another one of those things of like, if it doesn't matter to me, I don't need to mock it or anything. It's fine. Like, people want that. That's great. Yeah, yeah, and that's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I talk about this a lot. The Ann Leckie books, the Rad Space or whatever it's called series, where the whole Addy is snoring. I don't know if the mic's picking that up. He might still be awake, but he's snoring pretty heavily. In those books, the entire civilization doesn't recognize gender. They are humans and they have sexual dimorphism in their bodies. They don't recognize gender. And in the series, that it's just all female pronouns for everyone. Mm. And it's very interesting read, because your mind, sometimes my mind would gender based on things I would read, and so, and a couple of places, because in the process it's this society and we do a couple of times leave this society and are in societies that have gendered pronouns, and like we'll talk, there's one point that we talk about, I know that here so and so is considered a he, is a male, and there, so then for the rest of the book, even though we went back to space where everybody's she, I thought of that person as male. But outside of that, it was very interesting to be like, I'm picturing this. And there's even a whole thing about this idea that like how people present themselves, how people dress, how people interact, all of the gendered behaviors still existed within the society. They just weren't based on gender. They were based on people's individual desires. And you know, so we didn't have feminine and masculine, but we had people that were doing a lot of behaviors that our society would put into those categories.
Gotcha.
And it was just such a fascinating look at things. And you know, various people in romantic relationships, and we never went into detail of like what bits they had, just certain people were in romantic relationships. So yeah, I found that very interesting, and it was an interesting what if scenario.
Do you think for the whole pronoun discussion that people who are uncomfortable with the pronouns that are usually ascribed to them, do you think very many of them would be in favor of like one pronoun for everybody, or do you think that this idea of, you know, personally selected pronouns is an important aspect of it?
All right. Short answer, I have no idea. Longer answer, I would guess it is mixed. I think a lot of people would find gender neutral pronouns throughout society to be very freeing. Especially if they are some like people who already go by they, them would do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people who are transgender very much want to embrace their affirmed gender.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And I mean, people, trans women who want to be treated as womanish as possible. And in fact, all of the, I mean, hell, I think I have a trans woman friend who, when they started transitioning, got really excited to pay the pink tax, as it were, and to be spending more because it really meant they were a woman. And so in that case, I think they might be disappointed in that. But I don't really know.
I did read an article sometime back where a trans woman was talking about how, you know, being part of the LGBTQ community, many times you hear conversations or you read articles or you basically see pieces of polemic about the gender binary and attacking it. And she was like, I don't want to attack the gender binary.
Some people very much like the gender binary.
I love the gender binary. That's why I didn't want to be the gender I was, and I want to be this gender. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there's not a monolithic cultural, you know, stance, I guess.
No.
In that community.
Transgender people have the breadth of beliefs about gender that cisgender people do.
Yeah, right.
And gender, as with sexual orientation, is a spectrum. As we all know, because I tell everybody everything, and we've been doing this podcast for over 10 years, have always identified, well, not always, but ever since like age 18, have identified as transgender. Before then, I didn't understand the term, but I kind of had that, and seriously considered transitioning and decided not to. And I have a friend who thinks that I secretly want to now, but the truth is, I glibly say my gender is whatever the hell I feel like nowadays, but I would say I pretty accurately identify as non-binary at this point, because I do sort of want to express myself however I want to express myself. And whether that is considered masculine or feminine, I kind of don't care anymore. I always balance that with, but I'm also a straight white man, even though other than white, I'm not really any of those things. That's how society deals with me, and that's how I function, and that is where I benefit from. So I think it is disingenuous to claim I am not those things at the same time. And so I think neutral pronouns would be awesome, but I know where I was at different points in my life, and I would not have liked that. For much of my life, I have been very into the gender dichotomy as an expression that I always would be like, I like my women very feminine and I like my men very masculine. I just happen to want to be on the feminine side. and that's how I felt for a very long time. And androgyny, I found I wasn't like opposed to it, but like, I mean, I guess it was very much tied up into sexuality and stuff. I found androgyny unattractive. And I found the others more so. And nowadays, you know, all that's out the window. And I only find very specific types of inanimate objects attractive. But that's a whole other episode. This lamp is nice, don't you think? Good lamp.
The pronouns don't mean anything to me personally. Like,
poor English education?
If someone refers to me as he,
that was a hilarious joke. You didn't even give it breath. That was a good joke.
Not really.
I was implying that you just hadn't been taught how pronouns work.
I get it. It just wasn't
good joke.
Funny.
If you know it was a good joke, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com.
I mean, when someone calls me he, I don't feel like, for one thing, I don't particularly identify as, you know, male. Maleness means nothing to me. I don't relate to maleness. I don't relate to femaleness. But when someone calls me he, I don't feel like they're forcing me into a gender box or something. I mean, I only feel forced into a gender box when someone says, how come you're not acting like this? Or when they seem to assume I'm going to like something because I'm male. It's like, oh, you probably really like football or whatever. It's like, no. But just by them using that pronoun, I don't feel pushed into a particular. And if someone called me she for some reason or her, same difference. Doesn't matter.
Has that ever happened?
Yes, because to some people think my voice sounds very, you know, high pitched, I guess. And it probably does in different contexts. I think I've, on the phone, I've been mistaken for a woman before.
See, because I think I've discussed this before too. I am frequently misgendered. And I don't mean recently when I've really sort of leaned into my non-binary things. I mean, throughout my life, on the phone especially, but also in person, sometimes in person with people who like work with me regularly and stuff. It's never, oh, I thought you were a woman in person, but it just slips out for them. They'll say she, or they'll say ma'am, or things like that. And I don't know where it comes from. And I find it really fascinating and kind of cool in a way. It makes me feel a little more fluid about things, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, I've had lots of people
why that happens
independently tell me that I'm not male. That's happened a lot, but I've never had anyone suggest I'm female. Again, except on the phone. If I don't know, sometimes when I'm on the phone, I won't speak very loudly. Mm-hmm. And if I speak soft enough, I could sound like a woman with a deeper voice.
Yeah.
And the person will say ma'am or she or whatever. I won't even bother correcting it. Yeah. Because it's like, I don't care.
We both are at a tonal level that could sort of go either. We're both in that tenor range. Mm-hmm. And so I know at Applied, this used to happen a fair bit, because in tech support, in any phone support situation, you have an introduction that is supposed to be based off of what you're supposed to say. And very quickly, it becomes rote, to the degree that sometimes you answer your home phone and accidentally said, thank you for calling Applied Systems Technical Support. This is Tony. I can do very. And so you get to where you rattle it off awful fast. And sometimes I would rattle it off fast enough that people would not hear Tony. They would hear Terry or Kelly. I got a couple times, things like that. Yeah, I know that. Then I think people still assume there, but every once in a while they'd catch themselves later in the call. So wait a second, what was your name again? No, like, I heard something else. And so that can do it too. And yeah, you and I are both in a position that I think on the phone, if we forcefully presented ourselves as one or the other, most of the time people would buy it.
I never thought about that, but you're probably right.
Because we're both just tonally in that range.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get a lot on the phone, and then just sometimes in person is odd. And my favorite is still the very manly man that I worked with at one of the newspapers. And he was telling me something, and afterwards he was like, thanks, man. And I was like, you were about to say ma'am, weren't you? He's like, yeah, I don't know why. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's fine. But you could really tell, because he was like, thanks, man.
That's interesting. That's never happened.
And he was very, like, you could also see the look on his face, because to him, that would have been bothersome.
Oh, like mortifying.
Yeah. And I was just like, no, that's funny.
That's interesting.
Yeah. This is weird. All right. We got to do another one of these. So I'm getting away from you, people. I have to stick around with him. So pity me. Write us emails. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Write some emails. Do it. Thank you. Good night. Go to the blog. Talk about which of us dislikes Edge Helen Moore, how poor William's education was, how you feel about gender pronouns, and Dante's Divine Comedy, I guess. I mean, if you really want to talk about Trump, you can. We're not going to stop you. We're like that conservative version of Twitter. We will not censor your speech, but say goodbye, William.
Goodbye, William.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.